Hi, this is John from Joe's Pub. They Might Be Giants play Joe's Pub on May 16th. John Flansburgh is one half of the band and joins us today to discuss his work and the upcoming show. Thanks for speaking with us, John.
Hey, it's nice to be talking on the phone into a recording device.
Cool.
So are you recording it on a regular tape recorder, or is this some kind of high-tech...
This is high-tech gizmo. We only the best for us down here at the pub.
A flash recorder?
I don't think it's a flash recorder. I think it's something that goes directly onto our server. I don't know. I'd have to check with our tech people.
Yeah, I did a conference call the other day where everything was just being, like, it was total NSA style. Like, we were just being surveilled, and it was all being recorded.
If I'm not mistaken, I think the public theater has appropriated a massive brain, and we just sort of directly put that information into it.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Joe Papp's dreams have finally come true.
I think it might be Joseph Papp's brain. It's entirely possible. This is your 25th year together.
With Alistair Cook's limbs.
With Alistair Cook's limbs?
Did you hear about Alistair Cook had his limbs stolen?
No, I did not hear this.
It was part of that, you know, that sort of ghoulish grave-robbing scandal. This New Jersey dentist guy was selling body parts. You can sell body parts of dead people as, like, organ donors, but they're not really... It was a total illegal gray market thing.
Who wanted an arm?
Well, what's really sad is that somebody got their thigh bone from Alistair Cook's body, and you know, Alistair Cook had died of bone cancer.
Whoa!
So basically, that's not the kind of thigh bone you want connected to your rest of your bone.
No, but I mean, hey, Alistair Cook. You know,
I know it would be a classy way to go.
Yeah, and an excellent story for a party.
Exactly.
I mean, that's a definite lead-in. This is your 25th year together with John Linnell as They Might Be Giants.
Yeah, and you mentioned that right before we hit the record button, and I realized we haven't done anything to...
Really? Nobody's pointed this out to you? Or?
Well, you know, I guess the thing is, it's like, you know, right around the time that the band turned 20... There was a lot of things happening that seemed like, you know, chapter one, you know, 1 through 4 were being completed. We had Rhino made a box set about us, and we had this documentary film made about the band. And
That'd be gigantic, I think.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, all these things happened that made it seem like we were just sort of institutionally set, and I guess, as exciting as it is to see, and there was this like profile in the New Yorker, and all this stuff that just made it seem like, you know, we're this, you know, forever kind of entity. And I guess, you know, it's interesting to exist this long in the culture. I mean, it's certainly unusual for things to stick around that long. But I guess for us, you know, we kind of think of what we're doing as like an ongoing experiment, and it robs a little bit of the energy of you know, your creative thing to just, I mean, I guess it invites you to sort of rest on your laurels, and that's not necessarily like a good impulse, you know, and you know, I mean, a lot of the challenges of kind of dealing with that kind of, dealing with your legacy and dealing with that kind of stuff is, you know, on our minds as we're sort of finishing, we're just about to make this new album. I think, you know, It is. I mean, this is our 12th album, and it is kind of hard to know why anybody should do a 12th album. But I think we wanted to avoid the thing of just like reinventing ourselves radically. But we also didn't want to just be repeating ourselves, and that's an unusual balancing act to have to, you know, and still just be good, you know, in a direct way that plays to, you know, our strengths. I guess that's like a bit of a tightrope walk, but.
Well, you mentioned your new album. It's produced by the Dust Brothers.
Yeah, half of it's produced by the Dust Brothers, and even that was sort of a big challenge because, you know, we have a live band that we're, you know, very proud of, and with Marty Beller and Danny Weinkauf and Dan Miller, and we've been working with these guys for a long time, and you know, people who've seen our show kind of know the level of like continuity that the band has. It's a real band. I mean, we've been playing with these guys a long time, and the spirit of what we do, I think, is pretty tangible. So we took on the idea of working with the Dust Brothers as kind of just an open creative challenge. But part of it was we wanted to integrate that with what we do. and not just have, you know, become like a, you know, a vehicle for the Dust Brothers. So in some ways, it seems possible that people who are, you know, fans who think that, you know, the Dust Brothers equals Odelay might be surprised and maybe even disappointed that it isn't more just like Choogly beats and, you know, the stuff that the Dust Brothers are known for.
You worked with them on a remix of Snail Shell, but that was 13 years ago. Have you done work in the interim?
Well, that was just them. I mean, that was your classic remix situation where you ship the track off and they take out whatever, you know, they find boring and put on whatever they want to have fun with it. I mean, that's the whole remix thing is kind of a, you know, message in a bottle sort of kind of collaboration. It's not, there isn't a real back and forth. Like this time working with them, well, I was actually doing a interview with Beck on ABC TV for the Nightline right at the end of the Nightline Ted Koppel years, and I interviewed John King and was kind of hanging out at his house in L.A. With, you know, he's got his own little home studio there that's like very, very cool, and he just seemed like a really interesting guy. And you know, he worked electronically and he worked with live instruments. And you know, for a band, for I guess, you know, we've worked with lots of different producers in the past, and you know, I mean, and we've done a lot of self-production. But what was exciting to me about the John King possibility was that they're comfortable in both worlds, and I feel like that's always been a key element of what John and I do. We work with synthesizers and we work with drum machines, we work with technology, but we also work with live instruments, and it's not neurotic. You know, it's like we're not wearing lab coats, we're using technology in a casual way, which I feel in some ways really reflects regular people's lives. You know, we all have all this electronic stuff in our lives, and it's not some science fiction movie, it's just modernity, and that's kind of the way they work. And you know, in the past we've worked with producers who had a very organic bent, or producers who had a very artificial bent.
You've recorded on a gramophone, among other things.
Yeah. Oh well. I mean, we're interested in electronic stuff too. But you know, I guess my point is like it was exciting working with people who weren't afraid of anything. You know, I mean, these guys are, you know, kind of their own creative force, and you know, have a lot of interesting ideas and a lot of odd ways of working. So it was just a way of opening things up and kind of taking on new ideas without kind of breaking up the band, if you know what I mean.
This is your 12th album.
Yes.
And it's not even those 12 albums don't even represent probably a very good sense of just how much music you guys have written and put together over the years. How many songs? Are we talking over 1,000 or under 1,000?
You know, I mean, it's hard. It's really hard to say. You know, between Dial a Song and the podcast material, you know, there's a lot of like short song ideas. I mean, we kind of run this ongoing, you know, Frankenstein lab, you know, song doll hospital, you know, mashup thing where a lot of ideas kind of get grabbed and put to the service of other songs as we go. I think, you know, I actually feel like our albums are our best effort. You know, we do the other stuff for fun, and we kind of let the world in on that stuff. I mean, the podcast, a lot of the material on the podcast is, you know, that's the only place it's ever going to be. I mean, I guess we're kind of toying with our own insignificance by, you know, putting that stuff out into the world. But I don't know. Somehow, free seems like about the right price for some of that stuff. I feel like our albums are kind of our you know, important stuff. That's like that's the real stuff. But I have no idea what the actual song count would be at this point. You know, it's well. I know when we get our like BMI statement that they're, you know, there's hundreds of songs on there. And, you know, doing stuff for television where you're literally, you know, doing like a dozen things in a week, you know, doesn't, you know, just adds to the stack. It's kind of hard to say. We don't keep very good track of these things.
You've mentioned Dial-A-Song in your podcast, and in a lot of ways, Dial-A-Song may have been one of the first free music sharing programs that were out there. I'm curious, you do take advantage of the Internet in a very big way, and a lot of what your aesthetic is about seems to be about just kind of letting people listen to the music. If the Internet had been around in the same way that it is now with YouTube, with peer-to-peer sharing, how do you think that would have affected your growth as a band?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, in some ways, you know, I guess we were lucky that it didn't exist because we might be just one of, you know, a million bands, you know, bombing people's MySpace pages with weird robot programs saying, like, check out our thing. You know, I mean, there's a lot of cultural noise now. I mean, we've, you know, in some ways, you know, when we started Dial-A-Song, it really was just like a local New York thing. And, you know, it was just music for dozens of people, at, you know, for a couple of years there. But that was exciting in its own way. I'm into it. I feel like for us, you know, at the risk of sounding, you know, completely pretentious, like, you know, for us, the best part of you know, giving music out into the world for free is just that. You know, it's just having that casual, you know, the ability to just casually put a song into the world is exciting to us. You know, as a strategy for getting famous, you know, there's the Dial-A-Song thing has had extremely long legs. I mean, press people talk about it a lot, and that has definitely been useful for us. But I guess the part that is hard to explain, but since this is being recorded and there is full context for what I'm saying, is like, I slightly resent the idea that doing it is just a vehicle for getting famous, because I feel like that kind of undermines the what's the ultimately the most interesting thing about it. I mean, to me, people hearing the songs on Dial-A-Song, having no idea who we were or any context for the band besides it just being this mysterious phone machine, was probably the most interesting thing we could ever do, because it was a mystery.
You've saved some of the answering machine messages of the people who would, like, listen to it, and clearly the ones that resonated the most for you were the people who clearly didn't understand what it was that they were listening to.
Well, I mean, that was, for a long time we ran ads in the back of the Village Voice, and just to keep the ad inexpensive, it just said, like, Dial-A-Song, They Might Be Giants, and the phone number, because, like, you were paying by the word. So a lot of people just called because they saw the back of the Village Voice, and, you know, it was next to, like, get your, you know, be part of a sensory deprivation experiment, or, you know, free, you know, massage or whatever. You know, it's just like part of the weird world of the Village Voice kind of New York City culture. We saved them for a long time, and some of them are really, really nuts. At a certain point, I guess around, like, I don't know, in the mid-'80s, late-'80s, the velocity of calls kind of took off, and we actually had to stop taking messages because people would either just filibuster and talk into the phone machine forever and never switch off. And once the message machine was full, it wouldn't give any more outgoing messages. It would just be like, it would just stop.
So, you do have an intense fan base. I mean, you have your own wiki.
I think Klaatu probably has their own wiki now. I mean,
well, more maybe, yes, but you certainly can't deny
we have a very thorough wiki. I mean, the people who run the They Might Be Giants Wikipedia site I feel like I could put together a diary from the level of information that they have in there.
Is that more creepy or more flattering, do you think?
Well, I mean, it's immediately flattering on one level. I mean, I guess, you know, to some degree, John and I can't, you know, we don't really think about where we are in the world and in the culture. You know, it's I think in some ways our orientation is always more to the back row than the front row. You know, we're still, and maybe that's just because we started in a club setting where, like, you know, part of it was, you know, just trying to win over the room. And, you know, for 5 years, we would just play in what were often kind of hostile environments. And, you know,
when you say hostile, do you mean hostile because of the nature of what you were doing?
We played in a lot of, you know, there weren't a lot of, like, live, a lot of the live venue situations in New York City were also, like, you know, part-time discotheques. So there would be a lot of, like, disco people there.
And you guys would walk out with an accordion.
Yeah, they just sort of hate us, you know, on site, you know. And then, you know, it seemed like kind of our job was to sort of win them over the course of our show. And I guess, you know, that seemed like kind of, that was kind of the point of what we were doing in some ways, was just to open people's minds to the possibility of what we were doing. That's really always our orientation. And you know, once you have somebody's attention, you can do other things with it. But I don't think we ever want to make the assumption that, you know, people are just, you know, preset to dig what we're doing. I think that makes people kind of artistically lazy.
This is the obligatory dumb rock critic question. Do you feel that you don't get the kind of critical attention that the amount and depth of your songwriting deserves because of some of the oddball nature of the orchestration? And
I think not being taken as seriously as we are is kind of, will always be our cross to bear. I mean, I think we're probably taken about as seriously as we should be in some places. I don't know. Our intentions are there's a lot of contrary motion in what we do. You know, it's like I think we kind of want to have our cake and eat it too. In some ways, it's like by doing the lighthearted stuff that you know that's on the podcast, it's hard to imagine why anybody would take us seriously. Ultimately, it's a creative thing, and
do you have aspirations at some point to do like a, I don't know, They Might Be Giants opera or like something that would be your big we should be taken seriously piece?
I mean, maybe that's, you know, no. I think that's exactly what we would never want to do. I feel like, you know, just writing good songs, writing interesting songs is a big enough challenge for us. You know, that's kind of what we hitched our star to in the first place, and that's kind of where we're at. I'm not that worried about being taken seriously. I don't know how important it is for people in rock bands to be taken seriously. I don't know how important rock music is, to be perfectly honest with you. I feel like in some ways, you know, as much as I love it and as much as I just obsess on it and it's completely taken over my life, I do have to admit there are times when I feel like it's just not that important.
You mentioned Ted Koppel earlier. Was he the recipient of Alastair Cook's thigh bone?
I don't think so.
Did he turn it into an osso buco?
Well, you know, I mean, he's got a whole deal with Discovery Channel. Maybe they're working on a special.
John, thanks for taking the time to talk with us.
Hey, well, thank you so much for having us on joespub.com.
it's a prestigious space.
I feel like we're finally being taken seriously.
It's about time. They Might Be Giants will be performing a special CD release show for their new album The Else at Joe's Pub on Wednesday, May 16th at 9:30 p.m. and 11:30 p.m. To find out more, you can visit us on the web at www.joespub.com or at www.tmbg.com. We hope to see you here.